Thank you very much. So welcome everybody to the call. The precise role of who is on the call will be reported in the notes. So far I see Glenda Saint-Jury, Dan Krim, Lynn Goodenough, Maria Farrell, Avery Doria, Susan Carol Gucci, Pat Kane, John Nevitt, Marjorie Mullen, Steve Atalitz, Bertrand de la Chapelle, Claudio De Gangi, Val Benitris, Michael Vornica, Steve Del Bianco. Apologies if my pronunciation failed on any of those. Today, we're following on some of the discussions we had at a productive meeting in San Juan. We've got a new version of the report, 1.3, to look at, which attempted to clarify and composite the earlier versions of the report so that things were coming together that had been discussed. And what I really want to try to achieve today was to go through three, maybe four issues that seemed to me also to be, as we started talking about in San Juan, those sort of critical path issues whereby one decision on those may lead to certain implications following that. And in particular, the choice on the agenda follows some of the discussion that's been on the list since San Juan. If we don't finish today in the hour in front of us, we will continue on such discussions on the call next week. And the ambition after that would then be to verify the report as a whole in terms of where we've got agreement, just to check that is the case, or if not, make changes to the level of wording there. So I hope that sounds okay for everybody in terms of the modus operandi.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to state that Fabio Silva just joined the phone call from Burberry.
Okay, Fabio, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And so is Ross. Good morning, Fabio.
Ross, hi. So for kickoff, which hopefully may be a relatively quick item just to warm up, and this follows on from the discussion we had in San Juan, section 2.6 of the current report talks about the relationship between the OPOC and existing tech and admin contacts. We heard earlier, I think, some convincing argumentation from both the registrar side and certain larger users as to the usefulness of certainly continuing with the tech contacts. And I think, for me, what was just missing was argumentation that was clear in terms of the distinction between the existing administration contact and the possible future OPOC. So I just wanted to initiate a little bit of discussion on that first, to see if going forward we should say either should continue to be a distinction, and this is a distinction, so we write that in the report, or to make a recommendation that maybe in the future those two roles could be put together if such a distinction can't be made. So who would like to address that issue?
This is Steve. I'll be glad to get in the queue.
Okay, so Steve to kick off. Who else for the queue?
Yeah, Philip, it's Ross, please.
Ross, who else? Okay, that's fine. Let's kick off with those two. Steve.
Thank you. Yeah, certainly it could be the case that there would be some redundancy here between OPOC and the admin contact. There might well not be, though, the idea that a piece of data that now is publicly accessible would not only become only accessible through some other method, but would disappear entirely is a bit unsettling to those who depend on access to this data. I can see why in many cases it would not add anything. If it was the same data as the OPOC, then obviously, getting access to that in a case where the OPOC failed in its responsibilities and you went to the reveal step or whatever, you wouldn't gain anything. But there would be cases where you would gain something and some more data to be able to try to get in contact with registrants. So I have some uneasiness about this. I guess my sense is that if we get the responsibilities and roles of the OPOC right, then then we may not have a big issue with eliminating the admin contact, but you know, any support for that be sort of conditional on what the outcome is of the roles and responsibilities of the OPOC.
Okay, so that's understood. I mean, the working assumption that I think we have here is that if this proposal went forward, then there would be an OPOC for everybody, regardless of the nature of the registrant. Huh? And then simply the display of that data would change, be limited in the case of a natural person. And therefore, for a natural person, you would see you would not see display of admin and tech data. You'd only see the OPOC. And if this merging were made, in the case you would see full data display, but instead of seeing admin, you would now see OPOC would be one scenario.
In the case of a legal person.
Yes. Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. In the case of a natural person, I'm confused there.
Sorry. What I'm saying is the working suggestion at the moment is that OPOC has a sort of universality, so that both legal persons and natural persons would appoint an OPOC.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, for a natural person, that display would be limited, and you only see the OPOC contact. And in the case of a legal person, you would either see admin and the OPOC, or in a simplified world, you would only see one contact, which would fulfill the two roles. I mean, that would be the scenarios as I see them.
Thanks for that explanation. I mean, and I think in the legal person arena, it doesn't make that much difference but in the natural person arena, where you would have the OPOC, and if the OPOC failed in its responsibilities, we would be reluctant to give up the chance to have access to admin contact.
Okay, because potentially that would be that depending on the nature of the way the registration was done, that may be a different contact address.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Understood. Ross.
Yeah. You know, I think a couple of things. First off, I think data collection is completely a separate issue from data publication, and the purpose of this group and who is questioning in general is dealing strictly with data publication and not data collection. Certainly, if an OPOC contact is created, data collection practices would have to be changed, but that's slightly out of scope for what we're discussing here, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Certainly within...
which would mean we might make a recommendation, but it wouldn't necessarily be a recommendation for that to be looked at, but it wouldn't necessarily be a recommendation of the group.
I'm just pointing out that spending a lot of time on it is probably not the best use at this point. As it relates to admin technical and operational point of contact publication, I think we're sort of losing sight here of one of the original propositions in establishing this contact type. One of the original goals was to make the WHOIS more useful to a broad range of users, not to make it more complex. I'm not sure that I understand why we would want to add a third contact type to any of the WHOIS output, when we could simply be looking at changing the responsibilities of the administrative point of contact. It just doesn't seem to make sense to publish a third contact data. If the proposition is to merge the administrative and technical responsibilities and augment those responsibilities and shore up those responsibilities, then I think what we're hearing around the OPOC replacing those contact details would be useful. But in terms of simply adding a third contact point, I think we're just leading to confusion and complexity. This is completely unwarranted.
Okay. So if this proposal went ahead, your simplest proposal would be that potentially what we currently are calling the admin contact, we could simply give those responsibilities to what we're currently what we are describing as the roles of the OPOC.
No, to be
and they would become one. Is that the idea?
To be explicit, Philip, what I'm saying is that merging the responsibilities of the administrative and technical contact, as well as augmenting it with the additional responsibilities found in this document, is the least complex path forward.
All right. So, do you prefer to have all three merged?
Yes.
Okay.
No, my preference would be to get rid of the operational point of contact and keep the administrative and technical contacts. But failing that, I think merging them is the next most sense, probably.
Okay. I mean, certainly that follows my instinct. That was different to the conclusion of some of the registrar colleagues and users, I think, in a San Juan meeting. But
anyway. I can only speak for myself.
Indeed.
This is Alfred. Can I get in the queue?
So who was that?
This is Alfred. Can I
Alfred,
get in the queue?
Yep. Who else? The queue? No, Alfred, go ahead.
Okay, yeah. I just had one comment to add. When I was in the group before talking about OPOC, I had always understood it as a role with responsibilities and had basically seen it as something that any one of those three other contacts would have basically an extra role assigned to it, which was the OPOC role as it got defined and understood later. And basically never saw it as a new thing or an additional thing, but basically you took one of the other existing entities in the record, and this was a role that was assigned to them, and then it enabled the other outcomes.
Okay.
Phil, this is Dan.
Phil, this is John. Could I be added to the queue?
Dan and John. Yeah, anybody else in the queue?
Go.
Say again your name, please.
I think that was Yaovi.
Yeah,
Yaovi. Okay, Yaovi. Thank you. Dan, go ahead.
So I guess what Aubrey's saying is that the OPOC would be sort of like a flag on tech or admin contacts as they might exist now. My comment is that the tech and admin contacts right now seem to be sort of informally described. They're there with a label, but to my knowledge, we don't have any formal responsibilities assigned to any particular person who gets labeled with a tech or admin label. So what would be new about the OPOC is that there are actually formal responsibilities being defined by this group for that particular role, and I think that's where a lot of the more interesting considerations come to play. I'm not sure why losing an admin display in the case of domains whose registrants are natural persons would necessarily, you know, be an onerous removal of information above and beyond the intent, which is to actually protect the personal privacy of natural persons. And in such case, one would expect to actually lose a little bit of access. That's the whole point of creating the OPOC in the first place. So just to answer Steve's comment, one should expect to give up a little bit in this whole framework, because that's what the definition of the framework is.
Okay.
Philip, if I could just get in the queue, please, if I could.
Sure. John, next.
Thanks. I had a quick question and a quick comment. The question is, in the report on this section, and I think earlier you referred to certain registrars taking a position in San Juan. I was just wondering which registrars took that position, so that way we could coordinate if necessary. So that's a question. And then the comment is, I think from what I'm hearing, I support Ross's comments that this group should be talking about what we display and should not be dealing with what information is collected. Obviously, by definition, if we say an OPOC should be displayed, then we will need to collect that. But short of that, the report now says the technical context should continue to be collected, and I think we should really take a close look at the report and make sure that we're talking about display and not collection.
Okay, and where are you, John, on the sort of simplification proposal that Ross was discussing?
I support Ross's comment.
Okay, so we're all mostly moving in the direction of simplification, so long as that doesn't lose out any ability to actually contact people. I think that's, would that be a fair summary of where we are so far?
Philip, can you add Carol to the queue?
Okay, Carol.
Yovi was in the queue.
Indeed, Yovi, and you're next to speak. Go ahead.
So is there a way you can answer my question, Philip?
That I can ask you a question. So in terms of which way to Straws?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember Margie was in the room. I seem to remember you were in the room at some point.
I was in the room, but you said that they... I didn't make any statements on this issue. That's
okay.
Sure.
Then I think probably certain way to Straws was referring to Margie. Would that be correct, Margie? Are you on the line?
Yes. Yeah, are we talking about the difference between tech and administrative contacts and virtual
Yes, and that you were in favor of retaining those in addition to OPOC.
Yeah, I'll explain why
if you want. Okay, if you'll bear with me, that would be a useful explanation, I think. Just go ahead, please, Margie.
Okay, sure. Sometimes the reason there's a difference between a tech and an admin contact is an example where there's a hosting company involved in registering the domain name, and so it's frequently the case that you may have one person as a technical contact, and that's the actual company that's hosting the content versus the administrative content, that's actually the registrant, that controls the content. And so I just want to make sure that there's still an ability to have, more than one contact, because in those situations, it may have difficulty getting hold of the registrant if you've merged them.
Right. Okay. So you think
the policy proposal, Margie, clearly spells out that you can specify multiple contacts.
But yes, so Marty, your concern is redundancy more than anything else.
My concern is I just don't want to lose out the where there is a need for separate contacts, and if registrars are clear about the ability to designate more than one, I'm not sure how clear it is at this point.
Right. Okay. And in terms of supposing admin and OPOC were merged, you'd be more comfortable with that, would you?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks very much. Yuri, you're next to speak.
Yeah, I think I have the same comment based on the third document we have, the background document. It said that OPOC removes the current administrative and technical contacts and require registration. So we have some information there. Well, I think the idea at the beginning was to simplify, to remove the administrative and technical and bring OPOC now. So I just want to point that out, that in the background document, the idea was to merge or to remove technical and administrative and to have now one contact, which is OPOC.
Absolutely. That was in the background document, and that's why we're discussing it. Thank you very much for bringing that to our attention. Ross again.
Yeah, I wanted to pull up that same point, actually. There's I've heard this repeated, and it's driving me crazy at this point. The intention of introducing the operational point of contact was not to remove data from the whois. It was simply a recognition that the administrative and technical contacts were completely ill-defined, that registrants didn't understand the roles and responsibilities of those contacts, and that perhaps now was a reasonable time to take a look at the roles and responsibilities of the administrative and technical contact and enhance those with some definition. The mistake that the drafters of that original policy proposal made was they said, and we can call this something else. We can specify many of them and call them something else. And it has now been characterized as a purpose of the OPOC is to remove data from the whois, and that's just patently false. So for the benefit of everybody that's listening, I'd hope that we don't continue to perpetuate that falsehood.
Okay, but you're still in favor of the simplification of roles, so long as those roles can be well defined. Be correct?
I would not be... Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Carol, you're next.
Thank you. I have to say that really helped a great deal, Ross. And I'm going to apologize if I missed part of the points because I stepped into the teleconference a little late. For me, I think there is a big difference between the issue of display and collection. I agree with the comments that were made with regards to that. If we're dealing with display, I understand the distinction. If we're dealing with collection, very real concerns with regards to if we don't collect the information that we have been in the past, because as Margie said, there is a very big difference between who you hire to do your technical versus the person that's actually the registrant. So I think I'm echoing some of the comments that have previously been said. I'm just a little bit concerned that if we're looking at simplifying the roles, that we lose what's really something that at some point in time helps us identify who the real point of contact is when we're doing an investigation, which tends to be more often than not the admin versus the technical. But that's just a side issue if we're only looking at the display versus the collection.
Sure. Kiddook, that's helpful. All right. Unless anybody else wants to speak, I think
Philip, this is Dan. Just one final comment.
Off you go. Yeah.
It really depends on the registrant how they use these fields right now. It's very informal. There may not be a separate tech contact or admin contact. It's just duplicating data for the registrant. So I think we should, at this point, hold off on characterizing anything in terms of the use of these fields right now in terms of the data that's collected and displayed. It can vary, and I know that registrars struggle with the task of trying to verify that this data is actually correct, and that's one of the reasons that we're trying to come up with this paradigm that protects privacy, because there'll be much less incentive to falsify such data in order to protect privacy, which people are doing informally right now.
Okay, Doug. I think for me, what I'll try to characterize with Maria in the next version of the report, I think, is to summarize most of our discussion as part of implementation options that might take place were the OPOC proposal to go forward. But I think there, with an emphasis on clarification of roles and simplification in terms of data collection and display where possible, if that's acceptable to all. And I'm hearing NEMCOM, which is excellent news. Let's move on to item two, a much more meaty subject, to do with verification and consent of the OPOC. If you look in the current report, this is sections 2.3 and 2.4, where the report, at the moment, tries to separate out the two slightly different points, albeit the way they're implemented may be similar. To do with one, should there be a requirement for the email address of the OPOC to be verified at the time of registration as an active address? And the second point on consent is, should there be a need for whoever is behind that email address for them to consent in some way to being appointed an OPOC by the registrant? And I think if I can attempt to characterize some of the arguments on either side. I think there's a feeling that the if you had a bad actor now standing behind an OPOC and that address was equally meaningless as some registrations at the moment, that doesn't seem to advance the consumer protection side very far. So that at least seemed to be a step forward. And on consent, I think it's probably more to do then with the fact that the OPOC was then given certain roles, and do you need at some point to have consent on behalf of that individual by some means or other, and if it's not done by a consensual email response or some other type of response, can it be done contractually between the registrar and the registrant? But consent may be required if you're expecting some roles and responsibilities. And I believe on the other side, the arguments against that were that both those mechanisms, that is verification of an active email address and consent to be an OPOC system, albeit universal on behalf of registrars, would impose difficulties both in time and cost. And therefore the question is that proportional to the benefit that would be had from two of those systems? So let me take a cue to speak on one side or the other on this item. Would like to start off?
Philip, this is Dan.
We have Dan. Who else?
I still have an outstanding question on this issue, Philip, so you can throw me in the queue somewhere.
Ross, okay, Ross.
Philip, this is Mike.
Mike, yeah. Who else? David Ferris, please. David Ferris. Anybody else?
Steve Del Bianco.
Steve Del Bianco. Anybody else? Okay, we'll start with that queue for the moment. Dan.
Yeah, it seems to me that whether we need the verification consent depends on what we finally agree as to the responsibilities of the position. So there's a dependency here that we may not be able to determine until we actually nail down the responsibilities. My personal feeling is that the OPOC should be essentially liable to the registrant and the registrant liable to the registrar, and any kind of verification should flow through the registrant.
Okay, I mean, I think that's an interesting way of looking at it. There will certainly be a simplification there, and maybe when we get to the registrar, they may be able to let us know if they can envisage a system whereby that would work. Talking of which, we have Ross next in the queue.
Yeah, the question I've asked repeatedly, and I don't believe I've received a satisfactory answer to, or at least an answer that I understand, is what this proposal is trying to address. I understand the mechanics of the proposal. I think I understand its implications. I think I understand its benefits, and I believe I understand its drawbacks. But what I don't understand is why this is being proposed and what the goal of this this set of mechanics or this set of processes is trying to address. Without that level of understanding, it's not something that I'm at all comfortable with. I think it's excessive and unnecessary, given that it appears to me that we're trying to implement something that optimizes, prevent the behavior of the bad actors. And without that clarification, it's just not something I can support.
And your concern is one of the mechanics to do this in terms of cost or the time lags that would entail. What's the main area of concern, Ross?
I think I've been pretty explicit with that on the mailing list. Generally speaking, it's the change to the registration processes that would be required, the change in registrant behavior that would be required, the change in registrar behavior that would be required, the change in the legal mechanics required to support this. There's probably two or three more things that I've talked about and now forgotten about.
Okay, thanks. Mike, you're next.
My concern is I think we do need to have a consent mechanism in there, because I think we previously agreed that the legal relationship would be governed by treating the OPOC as an agent of the registrant. And unless there's some sort of consent by the OPOC to represent the registrant, I think it would be much more difficult to establish an agency relationship.
Philip, can I get back in the queue? This is Dan.
Dan, I'm back on the queue. Okay, Mike, so you're
Adam Bertrand, so I can get in the queue.
Was that Bertrand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Adam as well.
And Adam, okay. Okay, Mike, so your main concern then is that the OPOC, we've agreed already, is acting as an agent for the registrant, and that you need some acknowledgement that the OPOC is happy to be the agent of the registrant, in essence.
Yes.
Yeah. Good. And Dave Farris is next.
Thank you. I want to caveat my intervention by saying I don't have the benefit of having participated in the San Juan meeting, so I don't know if what I'm saying is reiterating some past discussion. But from our perspective as a company, the OPOC is going to create another layer that we have to go through to be able to identify who the registrant is. And therefore, we need to ensure that there is an appropriate means for us to be able to contact and a live means for us to be able to contact the OPOC if this is indeed implemented, and that means we need some sort of email verification. Secondly, that there's this live email address. And secondly, I agree with what Mike said regarding the need for consent, but I'd also say Dan had mentioned that we don't know what the obligations are, but I think we've all agreed that there need to be some obligations assumed by the OPOC. If there are, we need some consent that the OPOC is willing to abide by those obligations and fulfill them.
Okay, thank you. Steve Del Bianco.
It's an implementation question, and largely for Roth and the other registrars. When we studied carefully what Paul Stohura put together in the must-may document for proxy registrants, we came to understand that the proxy took on a certain understanding that they would need to reveal information if they were presented with a request. They would need to reveal the registrant. So we got the understanding that the proxy, if not agency, had certain responsibilities, and therefore that it was a fair interpretation to say that an OPOC would also have responsibilities, and they would acknowledge those responsibilities. I think earlier on the call we talked about them being an agent. So mechanically speaking, isn't it the same thing you do today in the sense of getting consent to be the agent that you do for a proxy is what we're talking about with respect to the OPOC? And secondly, by them acknowledging or replying to an email wherein they make that consent, doesn't that automatically get us for free verification that they have a valid email address? Since the email try to obtain consent is replied to properly, that automatically implies they have a valid email address and that they're responding to it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I tried to separate out the points because they're separate in terms of the activity, but I think certainly in terms of implementation, they would naturally come together.
And that makes it simpler. And I guess the other question is for the registrars on the call: that do you not see the proxy and OPOC processes as being similar to each other?
Uh-huh.
So should we respond, Philip?
Was that John?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, let me get to the bottom of the queue. Let's just hear from others, because it's
okay.
All around the same topic first. If I may, Dan, I'll take Bertrand and Adam next, who haven't spoken yet, and then come to you. So Bertrand next.
Thanks, Philip. Well, my feeling listening to the discussion and the feeling was also present in San Juan is that people are addressing different layers of the problem sometimes. And I would like, mostly as an observer here, yeah, just to point to a question that was raised about the purpose of the OPOC. I hear this question coming over and over, and I must confess that it took me some time to understand exactly what was the general goal. As a contribution to help clarify things and correct me if I'm wrong, my feeling is that I've heard basically three elements. One element is the problem of compliance with national laws regarding privacy protection for individuals. This is mostly a question of shielding the visibility of the data and providing a good relay and potentially a reveal in certain cases. The second level that I understood mostly in the last meetings and in San Juan is the notion of the dimension of policing somehow the proxy services that can be applied to legal entities as well. So the first one is purely for individuals. The second element is potentially policing or regulating more the proxy services that have emerged. And the third thing that I heard for the first time here today, and that I think is worth mentioning because I never heard it before, is clarifying and strengthening the roles and responsibilities of the admin and tech contacts. These are three different elements. In as much as I'm surprised that late in the process there still are questions about the purpose of the OPOC, I wanted just to submit those three categories because as far as I'm concerned, this is how I try to examine it a bit from the outside,
mm-hmm.
And I hope it helps.
Yep, thank you very much for that indeed. And Adam is next.
Yeah, I just wanted to try and perhaps answer the question that you put on this item in the agenda. You sort of asked whether this is a critical path or simply nice to have. And I think that also sort of, by doing so, also answer Ross's question as to, you know, why we're doing this. And I think it comes down in just a sentence or two to that. If we don't have the OPOC in some way agreeing to take on these responsibilities, and in some way that's, you know, happens higher than the registrant, we don't really have any assurance that we have an OPOC in the sense that we that we would define OPOC, whatever it is, whatever we say the rights and the responsibilities of the OPOC are, and as someone earlier said, we may not have those fully defined yet, but we know that there's going to be some responsibilities. We don't have any sort of assurance that those responsibilities are ever actually going to be done, because we don't know that the OPOC's ever agreed to do that. And you know, if you leave it down to the level of that the registrant has to enter into this agreement with the OPOC, then you're going after the registrant for having not entered in the agreement with the OPOC, as that's a violation in order to get to the OPOC, when the whole point of the OPOC is so you can find the registrant. So you sort of have this zigzag back and forth sort of circular process, where ultimately we want to be able to find and communicate with, et cetera, the registrant, and it doesn't help us if we have another reason why we don't like the registrant, i.e. because they didn't enter into this contract with the, or this consent contract, whatever, with the OPOC, you know, if we can't find them in the first place. We just don't have a system, and we can throw this whole proposal out if we don't have any sort of, you know, assurance that the OPOC's actually going to fulfill the responsibilities or any obligation really to do so. So that's why I think this is, however robust or lean the responsibilities of the OPOC are, we need the OPOC in some way agreeing, and to address Ross's timing issue, I think we Margie and I hit this on the list. It doesn't have to happen necessarily before the domain is registered, or possibly even before the domain goes live. It can be the kind of thing where the domain's registered, the email goes out to the OPOC, and if it's not returned within some reasonable period of time, 2, 3, 5 days, whatever, then what happens? Well, it doesn't need to be that the registration fails. It can be that the registration reverts back to displaying the registrant's information. So, you know, we can solve that timing issue potentially, but if we don't have some sort of agreement to do the responsibilities, we don't really have a system.
Dan, you're next, and then John.
Yeah.
Pick me in the queue as well, please.
Thank you.
Okay.
I take Adam's comments seriously, and first of all, I would say that my personal feeling differs between verification and consent. I think it's perfectly reasonable to institute an auto verification system on the email for an OPOC, and if it's not verified, it could be flagged as not verified or something like that. But I think the greater framework here is that it's a question of liability and enforcement. Who is liable for misstatements of fact in the data, in terms of the data collection, and what should be the process for enforcement of violations? And so this is where I would point to the liability. You know, if the registrant chooses to designate an OPOC that's not going to, you know, fulfill whatever responsibilities we finally do define for it, then the enforcement still ultimately becomes, or it could be, and this is where we're discussing in a third point in the agenda today, could be to wrap some kind of takedown procedure by the registrar on the domain. So while that is it could be seen as an excessive remedy in some cases, it becomes an effective point of enforcement. But it essentially goes through the registrant, because it's the registrant's interest in keeping the domain operating. So if you have the liability and the enforcement pointed at the same point, regardless of whether you've revealed any data, I think that's a system that could work.
Okay, well, that may be, I think the liability question is an interesting one. I mean, ultimately, I guess we would all agree that the registrant is the party ultimately liable, and it then becomes partly a question of enforcement, indeed, and what we want enforced, as to whether or not It helps or is irrelevant for the OPOC to give consent, and that may be perhaps something that any lawyers in this group could help us with. But thank you for raising that. Now, I've got Charles, John, and then Ross.
Philip, would you put me in the queue?
Yes, Philip, I got to ask you to stop doing that, please. John's speaking on behalf of Network Solutions, and Ross is speaking on behalf of Two Cows, and that's probably the 15th time that I've heard that.
Yeah, I'll defer to Ross at this point. I had to step out for a minute, so I didn't hear a couple of the last comments, but I just wanted to answer Steve Del Bianco's questions, but I'll defer to Ross if he could respond to some of the
okay.
other comments.
Okay, so Ross, on behalf of Two Cows, off you go.
Thank you.
Look, would you put me in the queue? This is Lynn Gittendorf.
That's Lynn, yeah, in the queue. So,
Margie would like to be in the queue also.
So, is that Margie?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Walter would like to be in the queue also, please.
And Walter.
Chris Gibson.
Chris Gibson, anybody else? Okay, that'll do for the moment. Ross.
Yeah, Steve, to answer your questions about Paul's document, I think it's important to recognize that that document was written from the context of a service that has been developed in the open market by a specific commercial actor. It has no legal significance whatsoever in terms of how the relationships between the various players should exist from a policy perspective. So to extrapolate that into some sort of a definitive statement around the OPOC being an agent of the registrant is, I think, a little bit misguided at this point. Certainly, the term agent has come up a couple of times in this conversation today and over the past few weeks. My question about that concept is under what jurisdiction are we now defining the agency status, and what body of law should we fall back on? Or is the intent to actually create our own body of substitute agency, quote-unquote, law around this that we will institutionalize this contract or this policy? The latter, I can't buy into the scope of that concept. Philip had mentioned that that ultimately the registrant is liable, and I think that's a very important point for us to all keep in mind here. A lot of this proposal, from what I can understand, seems to be intent on spreading that liability around such that those with concerns can kind of mitigate a lot of the risks as much as possible. I don't think that this is appropriate behavior. The registrant is liable. Registrant will lose their name if they do not live up to their contract. Whether or not their home address is published in the publicly accessible database is irrelevant to that concept. Whether it makes it, quote-unquote, more difficult for an intellectual property actor to serve notice on that person is largely irrelevant to that. If the registrant is misbehaving, if the name is being misused, then that name should be revoked. I think that's a very, very simple concept, and spreading liability to all of these complex arrangements, through these complex arrangements, just doesn't add up for me. I think I'll leave the other points for anyone else who wants to speak.
Okay, thanks. Lynn.
Yes. I think this falls right in line with what you just said, Ross. In our day-to-day work, as we contact registrants for legitimate purposes, I'm trying to visualize what recourse or what step we would take if we contact an OPOC and they reply that they have no idea of what we're talking about and that they in fact have no relationship to the registrant. What would our next step be? Would it be to contact the registrar and have the name revoked? Would that be our next step?
Well, I would always presume that that would constitute inaccurate data at that point, and that the name would go through a revocation procedure, certainly.
I'm sorry, could you speak up? I couldn't quite hear that.
All right, Ross was saying that if the OPOC was not fulfilling their requirements or you couldn't contact them, then that would constitute inaccurate data, and therefore the existing provisions of takedown would apply.
And what exactly would be the procedure?
Ross?
Somebody that's got the most recent contract memorized would have to speak to that. I'm out of the loop on that. Essentially, it's
The who is breach procedure?
It's the data accuracy process.
Registrars get a complaint through the ICANN process. We have to We have 15 days. No, it's we have certain time period to send a note. For example, we send, we being Network Solutions, send emails. We try to call the registrant to inform them of the inaccurate data allegation. If they don't correct it or show that it is in fact accurate, then we have a right to take action, and we do.
So how much time do you think would typically be required?
In the current process, it's probably at least 30 days.
So again, in this scenario, if we have contacted an OPOC and they reply that they have, you know, that they're unaware of this obligation and that they don't know what it's about, then we would be looking at 30 days?
You'd be at the same position you are today with inaccurate WHOIS information. So if you have a bad actor that you're dealing with and today they put in inaccurate WHOIS information and you can't contact them, you'd be in the same position under OPOC if they put in inaccurate OPOC information.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. Actually, Maria, perhaps as a work item, we could just capture the text of that agreement and include it in the next report.
Sure.
That might be useful. Margie, you're next in the queue. Margie, you still with us? I'll come back to you. Walter.
Oh, sorry. It takes me a while to get my mute off.
Oh, beg your pardon. Margie is with us. Off you go, Margie.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just wanted to comment. I made some postings regarding kind of just operationally how you would get that OPOC consent. I wasn't really addressing whether we should get their consent, but this came out of the San Juan meetings. As registrars, we from time to time have obligations to go out to our customer base to ask for them to verify the WHOIS data. Once a year, we have this WHOIS data WDRP or whatever it's called procedure where we go out to our registrants and say, you know, this is your WHOIS. Please confirm it's accurate. And then if it isn't accurate, they get back to you. And so my point in the postings was that we have mechanics in place already to go to our registrants and to get them to do various things depending upon what the ICANN policies require. And so that was one of the suggestions was that you could theoretically get an email verification from the OPOC in order to get their consent if that's what the policy requires.
All right. And today, I mean, if you've got completely inaccurate data and you try to make your a contact and you get nothing back, do you institute takedown yourself within 30 days, or do you wait until the natural expiry of the domain name registration in terms of when the money runs out?
Well, this is John. There's no formal policy on whether we need to take any action, first of all, which I think is one of the benefits
right.
of the OPOC proposal was that we said it requires registrars to take action. So certain registrars will take action, certain registrars won't.
Okay.
And then the action is dependent, again, on the registrars' contracts with their registrants and their own internal policies. So some will actually delete the names. Some will put them in deep freeze so they can't be used and they can't be accessed by that registrant until it's fixed and until the expiration date. So it really depends on the registrant and registrar
okay.
relationship to answer
yeah.
your question.
Okay, thanks for that. Who is next? Valter.
Yes, thank you. I've got two questions. The first is, I got a bit confused at the beginning of the conference, is that when a law enforcement agency needs to access data, who do they go to the OPOC or to the registrant?
Well, your first point of call will be different depending on if they're a natural or legal person in our current.
Okay, and if it's a legal person, then you go to the OPOC?
Yes.
And that's the
because you'll have nobody else
person,
to go to.
Okay. And
so if it's a natural person, yes, then you will only have the OPOC to go to.
Okay, the natural person. So that would mean that the natural person would choose his OPOC, or does the registrant choose the OPOC? Because I'm a bit concerned here.
The registrant chooses the OPOC.
Okay, so there's always a link in between, because then it's fine, because we do not more or less directly contact the person we're investigating.
Exactly, yes.
Okay.
If a natural person in advance of you wanting to do anything, the registrant will have a point to the OPOC, and the WHOIS data that you will see will only let you will only be giving you the email address of the OPOC. So that will be the first point of contact that you have. There'll be nobody. There'll be no other email address to contact.
Okay, and the OPOC cannot contact the registrant, because that is what you don't want to have happen, of course.
Well, that becomes a separate issue if you're pursuing certain investigations. I mean, what we're discussing here mostly is a case where the OPOC will immediately be relaying information to the registrant and an action taken accordingly if necessary.
Okay, because most of the time they probably do not want the OPOC to
right.
contact the...
In which case it falls into this separate right. category that's described in Section 6, which is essentially where there is a request from the likes of yourself directly to the registrar concerning undisplayed data records, in which the OPOC plays no part at all.
Okay.
And that was a function of having described the OPOC as an agent and appointed by the registrant, that it made no sense to have the OPOC in some invidious position where they're being required to do one thing but they're acting for somebody else.
Yeah, that takes my worry away a bit, I think. Okay, the second one is I'd like to reflect on what Ross said a while back, I think maybe even half an hour, but it was on more or less the topic of self-regulation, who is looking at accuracy of data, and that Ross said that was something that we would not like to do. But what we're looking at is the same topic as with ISPs and content, who is best equipped to do so, and how do you want to keep law enforcement off the internet, more or less, and get them stationed somewhere in between, because that's what we're looking at this moment, to some sort of self-regulation on accuracy of data also. And my question is, who is best equipped to do this? Would that be the OPOC or the registrar?
The ISP.
For the ISP?
The ISP when somebody who's hosting the domain name.
Well, the conversation, I'm sorry, Philip, if I don't know if I...
go ahead, Ross. That's right.
The conversation keeps turning back to the application of the domain names, which is the use of the domain name in conjunction with an email address or a website or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The most honest answer I can give you on that subject is if those are the things that you are worried about, that we should be worried about, then the ISP or the web hosting company is the most logical place to take those complaints. Taking a complaint about a phishing attack to someone within the ICANN tent is like sending the fire engine to the wrong house. It doesn't make the most sense. It can be helpful in occasions. I'm not going to argue against that it isn't. But all of these services are hosted by ISPs and web hosting companies, and they are the ones ultimately that can actually solve these problems firsthand.
Good, but when I go to look into WHOIS data and it says Yogi Bear 33 at Yosemite or what is it, the other park,
yeah.
Who is responsible for taking down that name? Who is the one who says, okay, that's Yogi Bear, you're welcome?
Specifically on accuracy issues, it's a registrar. It's a registrar issue.
Right, and that's what I'm
yeah,
yes, if it's accuracy to do with the WHOIS data, then it's a registrar.
Right.
I don't think there's any debate on that point.
If it's connected with, and potentially if it's only connected with something in relation to the content of the website, then Ross is saying...
No, it's an analogy. There's also a discussion on ISPs and content.
Yeah.
That should be on the ISP side, but that's also a form of self-regulation, and the accuracy of data... There's also a discussion on self-regulation, more or less, because otherwise the government will have to step in and do it one day, and we all want to avoid that, as I understand.
Absolutely.
So that's why the ISP came in as another example.
Okay, thank you for raising that. Chris, you're next in the queue.
Hi, thanks. A couple of quick questions and points. One, I wasn't at the ICANN meetings, and so I don't know how much the question of this loose referral to agent role has been discussed. I'm not sure if that's the right model to think about it. Agency under different systems of laws allows the agent to bind the principal. There may be fiduciary duties. I don't think this is a model where a fiduciary duty is an appropriate way to think about an OPOC versus the registrant. It's a contractual service, of course. And that leads to my second point, which is one about liability and incentives. I think we are talking about a critical path to have at least something like consent, because without it, we've created a new layer without providing any incentives in the systems for OPOCs to act in a particular way. I think there's been some discussion about, because the registrant is ultimately liable, they are supposed to be somehow sophisticated enough to be able to select OPOCs that will carry out certain duties. I would say in this system, it can't be the registrant that has somehow the knowledge to know that. It has to be built into the system that the OPOC itself has some incentives. And I believe in the proxy model, the proxy might be, from the system point of view, treated as the registrant, and therefore has incentives to act in certain ways. If we don't have any liability on the OPOC, I don't see how this system has created any incentives for OPOCs to act in a particularly responsible way, and I don't see that putting liability on the registrant is sufficient for a registrant somehow to, in the marketplace, choose this. And as that last comment was, in a self-regulatory system, I do think we have to think of each link in the system and build a system in which the incentives are appropriate. And right now I see that, of course, with the idea of accreditation being shot down, as I understood it was, that we've left the system with a weak link because there aren't any incentives built into it, and we can't rely on somehow sophisticated domain name registrants to be able to know what they're supposed to be putting or placing responsibilities on their OPOCs. I think it's better in a self-regulatory system that it's done in the design of the system itself. And so, therefore, I think it is a critical path that we have acknowledgement and consent at the minimum.
Philip, if I may, please.
Yes, Ross.
Robert, can you put me in also?
Ross, anybody else in the closing minutes of the call? Who else?
This is Steve Metallic.
Steve, anyone else?
Bertrand.
Okay, Ross, off again.
I can't leave the statements made in that last comment out there. There are many examples.
Hello? Thank you. Yes, whoever's got the mobile next to their phone can please move away and carry on, Ross.
There are many examples in law and regulation where it isn't spread around to the degree you're proposing, and it works quite nicely. For instance, if I lend someone my car and they go through a red light and the red light camera takes a snapshot of my car going through the red light, I, as the car owner, get that ticket. That's a system that works very, very well. Everybody that drives my car doesn't have to be specially licensed and receive a notification and consent form to drive my car. It's assumed when they drive my car that if they're behaving badly, that I will receive the ticket. I really don't understand the need for that added complexity to do anything but hold the registrants accountable for the use of the domain at all levels.
But that can't be true, because if I do an investigation, Ross, on something on two cows and it was one of your clients, you don't want to receive the fine. You want your client to receive the fine. Is that correct or not? Sorry to interrupt, by the way.
That's okay.
I'm talking about the registrants being liable for the use of their domain name. Not the registrar, not the OPOC, not anyone else but the registrant.
Okay, so I mean, Ross, you're more uncomfortable with the concept of consent than you are with verification, but you're concerned about the mechanics of verification, I take it. Is that a fair summary?
I see them as being both completely unnecessary.
Can I make two quick comments? This is Chris.
Chris, I'll add you to queue if I may. I had Avery next.
And just let me qualify that, Philip. When I'm talking about verification, I mean verification of the relationships is unnecessary, not verification of the data.
So by verification, in this context, I simply meant verification of an active email address at the time of registration.
Correct.
Yeah.
We have accuracy provisions, and to the extent that they're appropriate, we'll continue to use them. And if that policy set needs to be adjusted, then let's do that through a different process.
Yeah. Okay. Avery.
I just wanted to make a brief comment. One of the previous speakers said that we had all accepted the notion that everyone had accepted the notion that we did not want government having to step in at any point, and that we wanted it all to be self-regulated. And I would want to argue that we don't necessarily have that agreement, and that I think in things that I've heard other people say, they basically said they want to leave things to the rule of law and law enforcement and not impose necessarily strict self-regulation that prevents any need for nations or laws to step in. So not arguing the case either way, I just don't think we necessarily have all of us agreeing to that point.
Steve McTonnett.
Yeah, just briefly on this issue of putting the liability solely on the registrant, I think we need to look at how this works today. If that, you know, if that system worked, we wouldn't have as much inaccurate data in who is as we have. And we also wouldn't have, because the registrant is responsible to do that, we've already heard about the 30-day or more process, even when it works, and it doesn't work at least a third of the time, that is required in order to enforce the accuracy obligations. And if registrant liability worked, we also would have no privacy issue about natural persons named as administrative or technical contacts, because every registrant has signed an agreement that says he has obtained the consent of those people to put their names in who is as the administrative and technical contact. So I guess under that theory, if there's a privacy issue, those administrative and technical contact people should be suing the registrant for failing to live up to their obligations, or perhaps the registrar should be proceeding against the registrant if the admin and technical contacts include natural persons whose consent was not obtained. I think this is enough to show that imposing the liability on the registrant really isn't working in the status quo, and there's no reason to think it would work. I mean, obviously, there are some cases where...
But why are we hearing about these accuracy issues now, Steve? This is... I don't understand...
What an accuracy issue.
We can't load this policy. You know what? Go ahead. Just continue on.
I'm done.
You're making...
Okay.
Phyllis, if I could make a comment, Sean.
John, okay, I'll add you to the end of the queue. I got Bertrand and then Chris and then John, and we probably need to call it a day as we're...
Thank you very much.
...minutes over our Bertrand.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Actually, my comments relate to something different than the discussion that is just happening, but I wanted to raise them before the meeting ends. One thing I was concerned in the document is that the relay function seems to be applicable only when there is a case of actionable harm, and I'm wondering whether this shouldn't cover as well the cases where you want to contact the owner of a domain name, who may be a natural person, for a purpose of asking whether the domain name is available or whatever other question you want to ask. And the relay function should be functioning in that case as well, I suppose. The second thing is that...
I think that's existing case, actually. There was a... I had a sort of implementation checkbox, I think, there, and there was an other category, which I think captures the point you're making.
Yes, but the reason why I raised
this...
There
could be very, very good faith reasons for wanting to contact a registrant at all, absolutely right, yeah.
No, absolutely, but the reason why I raised this is that the text itself says the group discussed what would be a typical nature of such requests. And the working definition of legal request goes immediately as if it were the only case.
Yeah.
There can be a legal request, and there can be just a direct request.
Okay.
The other element is that in the reveal, it's also taken almost for granted that this only comes when the relay function has failed. And I suppose that there could be instances where a very quick action is needed, and the reveal could be functioning a bit like the fast track processes in courts work, at least in France or other countries.
Okay, thanks so much, Chris.
Yeah, a couple quick points. One, I think it's important to point out, using that example of the person who receives a ticket when they're driving, it demonstrates two features that we have to bear in mind. One is that we're talking about an international space, not something that occurs in a particular country. And the costs of seeking, let's say, to go and find someone who's involved in a phishing attack, if you aren't relying on some sort of self-regulatory system that allows you to get access to certain data under certain circumstances, can be enormous, can be very costly. And so it is important to think about creating a system with the appropriate incentives so that you don't have to do it and just fall back to you know, go into certain parts of the world dealing with the national authorities there. It'll become much more costly. And second, using the example of receiving a ticket and the driver being responsible, that's based on a system where someone has registered their license plates, and that registration system is usually involved some form of national or local Department of Motor Vehicles. That's precisely the type of system that would then need more burden on, for example, registrars. If you're going to say they're essentially serving that role and they would be the ones that would be in the background, we're not saying they need more infrastructure because we haven't imposed or found a way to create incentives for OPACs to operate and act responsibly.
Because we're not registering domains today.
Uh-huh. Okay, Chris, thanks. And John, last word on this call.
Yeah, the only point I wanted to raise is that in the current report, we talk about this agency relationship, and I agree with the speakers who say that's taking this OPAC too far. And just to respond to Steve, most registrars do not have a proxy service. Certainly, okay. Network Solutions does not have a proxy service.
Right. No, I think, I just in response to the agency, I think we had got to that broad description. I mean, not necessarily it has to have the same thing as you might have a national legal regime in terms of what the agent's responsibility is.
Yes. But I think exactly.
It was characterizing the description there as opposed to somebody that was accredited, which was the other part of the discussion that was.
Okay, yeah. Under U.S. law, agency has a special meaning.
Yeah.
So maybe we can remove that in
the text, I think. Okay, well, I think we're going to have to call it an end for today's call. It's been very useful. I'll work with Maria. To get out an amended version of our existing report to try to capture some of the nuances and subtleties that we've had on this call on the two areas that we've discussed. It may be useful on the list if any of you felt inclined to discuss the question 3, which will be subject for our next call, in terms of the reveal option versus an on-request rapid takedown or some sort of takedown by the registrar when relay or potential remedies fail. And that's really just looking again at the nature of the roles of the OPOC. For me, the difference there is to some extent at what point might you have a system that is only to do with the requester, the OPOC, and the registrant, and at what point are you springing to involve the registrar? And I think there needs to be some clarification and distinction as to at what point you're going to the registrar. If we have a system which always seems to end up quite rapidly to the registrar, I suspect that may be overly heavy for all sorts of requests that may come this way. But that, I think, could be a useful subject for debate on list to help inform in our discussion next week at the same time. So thank you all very much for participating. I hope also by then, Maria, perhaps you could advise, will we have that report on authentication methods out by then?
Yes, we will. I'm actually expecting to have a draft of it available to the group by early next week.
Okay, Luke. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye.